As a general rule, when I hear about ancient Native American curses in New England, I tend to take it with a grain of salt. For the most part, the early colonists weren't inclined to take anything coming out of a Native American's mouth seriously enough to write it down. And I have a hard time believing that amid the epidemic diseases, the wars, the genocide, some kindly disposed Native person was about to pop up and say, "Hey, mind the swamp, some old guy cursed it way back when, while your ancestors were getting their crusade on. You can proceed with the execution now." You know, no, that just, maybe in a cartoon. Colonists in New England and their descendants have generally been very willing to put the blame for anything unusual or supernatural, or just scary, on people who were already dead or who had been forcibly removed from the land and can't really counter the accusations. But something's been happening in southwestern Vermont for a good little while. And while this doesn't seem like a typical ancient engine curse, if you know what I mean, oh sure, we've got the usual, this place was only used as a burial ground stuff, which I cannot verify outside of white people legend. Not that one should go digging to look for ancient Native remains to prove a point, so don't. But there's also an alleged legend about a cursed stone or rock that actually eats people. Yeah, that one stands out. It sits on the mountain with nothing to distinguish it from any of the other rocks and stones around it. And New England being the God's own rock garden, there are plenty to choose from. And anyone could step on it. And if they do, boom, eaten, boots and all, never to be seen again. And that's not the creepiest or strangest rumor about this area. I'm Jay, this is New England Gothic. Thanks for joining us this week. It's Thanksgiving of 2020, and I should give thanks for stuff. I'm grateful to you for listening, and grateful to New England for the endless stream of weird. I'm grateful to my neighbor, who gave us a homemade coffee cake yesterday. I just had some for breakfast. I'm grateful that I wasn't at Plymouth Colony that first winter when they tried to start growing stuff in December, even though that wouldn't usually work in England either. But hey, that's a story for another day. Today we're in Vermont, and while we're primarily going to be looking at Glastonbury, the ghost town and the mountain have to be viewed in the larger context of the phenomenon around them. You've heard of the Bermuda Triangle, you've probably heard of the Bridgewater Triangle. Now you're going to hear about the Bennington Triangle. If it's a creepy, maybe supernatural triangle, it has to start with the letter B. I don't make the rules. Let's start with Glastonbury, since it's how I got here in the first place. Glastonbury is the name of both the mountain and a ghost town on the mountain. Some guy in the 1750s decided to divide up the area into towns without ever setting foot in the area, which was kind of a thing in those days. So he didn't really realize that this great new town of Glastonbury wasn't exactly on arable land or flat land. It was more or less vertical. So it took a good while before people felt the pressing need to go settle it. The first real attempt at, I don't know, taming this mountain came in like the 1850s, and people were trying to profit from the forest itself. And logging and charcoal making were the primary industries. You can still see the charcoal kilns on the site today. The steepest railroad ever built in the U.S. was the only way in, and it only went as far as the suburb of South Glastonbury. It's after that you had to hike it. Tourism became the second industry after the logging industry lost its charm. The town itself dried up after a flood took out the railroad, and now maybe 6 people call the place home. Back in the 1890s, there were a couple of murders, one of which was committed by a man who was caught and was sent to a mental hospital, a secure mental hospital, after the fact, but he escaped. The murderer was never found. That's very exciting. There may be a Bigfoot. You all knew that we'd get to Bigfoot if we stuck around long enough, right? Nobody has shown a whole lot in the way of evidence, but people keep on mentioning that there may be a Bigfoot in them there hills. And as we'll see a little later, something keeps popping up in the area, and doing stuff. It might as well be a cryptid. Why not? Also, my autocorrect really hates the word cryptid. Just thought you should know that. So we've got a ghost town, we've got a Bigfoot, and we've got a cursed rock that eats people. I'd be extra careful hiking around here, but you do you. What else does Glastonbury Mountain need? How about cairns? I'm more familiar with cairns from Celtic and Norse cultures, although it does seem like similar structures have been found in other parts of the world. Several have been found on Glastonbury Mountain. I did read one report suggesting that they were of native origin, but the reasoning didn't quite sit right with me. The construction didn't look the same. The construction looked a lot more Western, like a lot more European. But I guess that there's only so many ways that you can build a cairn and have it last. I'm also not an expert on Abenaki construction techniques. I would still need a little bit more evidence, more... I would need to see some comparisons between other Abenaki structures and these. And the report that I saw did not have them. So I'm not sure what relationships the cairns have, if any, to a story about a cursed stone that eats people, or to reports that the mountain was put there or was only ever approached as a place to dispose of the dead. There just isn't a whole lot of linkage. They were usually used as trail markers by pretty much every culture except Celtic. So it could be that they were constructed to mark a trail to avoid the cursed rock that eats people. I'm really into this cursed rock that eats people. I just like it. But anyway, we're not really sure why the cairns are there or what, who built them. So, but they're cool. And hey, there might be a Bigfoot too. Glastonbury didn't or doesn't exist in a vacuum. Vermont is full of mountains and old logging sites and sparsely populated towns where people would rather just be left to their own devices. Glastonbury is one part of a region known as the Bennington Triangle. Glastonbury is better known for its creep factor because a ghost town can't afford public relations. But the eerie happenings are spread out across the whole area. I personally have been caught in the effects, which was briefly terrifying. One of the reported effects of the Bennington Triangle is the failure of GPS systems. Well, once upon a time, I was driving from my parents' place in upstate New York to a get-together in central Maine. That meant cutting through Vermont. I was fine with it. I love to drive, I love to explore, and I welcomed the chance to listen to my own music instead of, you know, an endless loop of 80s cock rock. As soon as I crossed into Vermont, my GPS cut out. I panicked for, like, a minute, and then I remembered that I had, like, a physical, actual compass. So, no harm, no foul, I just kept going east until I got someplace with a population and a gas station. I could stop and reset the GPS there. I didn't think much of it, and I just continued on my merry little way until I got to doing the research for this episode, and I learned about the effects that the triangle can have on your GPS system. When I checked a map, I realized that I had gotten lost just about at the edge of the Bennington Triangle, and while I came out just fine, other people haven't been so fortunate. Some of the other reputed effects of the Bennington Triangle include terrifying voices coming through the radio during dead air, kind of like some of the devices you might see on your favorite ghosty shows, and plane crashes, which, you know, yikes. Sinkholes have been an issue as well, which happen everywhere and are always disconcerting when they happen to you. Didn't one happen in New York recently where a dude fell in the sewer? I don't know. But the biggest and arguably the scariest effect of the Bennington Triangle would be the disappearances. They took place between 1945 and 1950. Some people might dispute that. They might add some disappearances that happened in 1942. But they left a scar that won't go away anytime soon. And they're also indirectly tied into the formation of the Vermont State Police, or so the story goes. Over a period of 5 years, five individuals from a wide range of ages disappeared from the Bennington Triangle area. Only one of them was ever found, and even then only as remains so decomposed that the cause of death remains unknown to this day. The variance in ages and genders suggests no relationship between the disappearances, but the close grouping of disappearances in terms of timing and geography suggests human action. In just a moment, we'll talk a little bit about the missing people and what we know. Rivers, 74, was the first to go. He was last seen on November 12, 1945, on a hunting trip. Most reports claim he was an experienced hunting guide and woodsman, but I've seen some sources claim he might have been experienced, but not when it came to Glastonbury Mountain. Either way, he disappeared and was never seen again. We do know that he was leading a pack of four other hunters when he got a little bit ahead of the group. Not far, just a little ways away. And the only trace ever found was a bullet cartridge that appears to have fallen from his pocket as if he'd bent over a stream for some water. The four other hunters appear to have made it home safely. Nothing special, nothing creepy. Just, you know, hey. Their guide disappeared. Paula Weldon, 18, was a student at Bennington College. She disappeared on December 1st, 1946. She was last seen hiking the Long Trail, of which Glastonbury Mountain is part, by an elderly couple who gave her directions. According to some sources, she was not dressed appropriately for the weather or for the trail. Apparently, the Long Trail, and, you know, if they had to make the steepest railroad in the U.S. to go up to the town, you know, this would be a challenging hike, and she was just in, like, a light red jacket and sneakers. Not real hiking gear at all. Polly's case seems to be one of the best documented of all of the disappearances. And her father's absolute rage over what he viewed as official disinterest apparently led to the formation of the Vermont State Police. Nevertheless, no trace of Paula was ever found. Some people speculated that she might have run away to Canada to live with a boyfriend, but there was no evidence to support that theory at the time or since. James Tedford, a local veteran, disappeared from his seat on a moving bus on December 1st, 1949.
The heck?
Witnesses confirmed he was on the bus at the last stop before Bennington, but he was not on the bus at the Bennington stop. An open bus schedule was found on his seat. His luggage was where he'd left it. He was just gone. No trace of him has ever been found. Interestingly enough, his wife also vanished mysteriously from their home in Franklin, Vermont, while James was serving in World War II. Like James, she was never seen again. Paul Jepson, also seen as Jepson, 8, disappeared on October 12th of 1950. He was last seen in a pickup truck driven by his mother. She stepped away to feed some pigs, and when she returned, he was gone. Bloodhounds tracked him to a spot on the highway near where Paula Weldon disappeared. The boy had previously indicated an intense interest in Glastonbury Mountain, but little interest in leaving home. I mean, he was 8. Two weeks after Paul disappeared, Frieda Langer, 50, went hiking and camping with her husband and a cousin. She was an experienced hiker and survivalist. She slipped and fell into a stream. She told her cousin to wait while she doubled back to camp to get some dry clothes. Her husband was back at the camp because he had hurt his ankle or something the day before. She never arrived back at camp. Her body was found a year later in an area that had been repeatedly searched. Her cause of death is unknown due to the advanced state of decomposition when she was found. What do these victims all have in common? Not a lot. They're all white, but so is most of Vermont. Their ages were all over the place, from 8 to 74. Most serial killers will choose victims within a very narrow range of age and gender. Most, but not all. Richard Ramirez was all over the place, too. Two of them were experienced wilderness people. Paula Weldon, according to most reports, wasn't even dressed for hiking, never mind winter hiking. One of them just disappeared into thin air. In the cases of Paula and Paul, police suggested that they may have run away of their own accord. Paula was supposed to have run away to Canada to live with a boyfriend, which drew derision from most of the people who knew her. Paul was supposed to have followed up on a yearning to go to the mountain, but a child that young will leave clues. Based on the Bloodhound's evidence, he seems to have been picked up off road. Some locals in Glastonbury have given rational explanations for the disappearances, outside the serial killer theory.
If they made it as far as the ghost towns, any one of these victims could have fallen into an old well or sinkhole. It's plausible. If they hit their head, rescuers wouldn't have even known where to start, and underbrush can hide a multitude of hazards. Paul Jepson would only be a couple of years older than my parents are. I think about that sometimes. I don't think he's still alive out there. But I do want to know what happened to him, and to the others. Not knowing is scarier somehow. There's not a whole lot about the location that would suggest why this bucolic little corner of Vermont would be a paranormal powerhouse. Bennington is the most well-known of the towns making up the triangle, hence the catchy name. Founded in 1761 mostly by Congregational Separatists, it was the home, more or less, of the Battle of Bennington, where revolutionaries successfully defended an ammunition depot. The actual battle site is over the border in New York, but I don't ask, they don't tell, it's fine. Prior to colonization, the area was home to Western Abenaki. It is currently the home to Robert Frost's grave and to Bennington College, which at one point was the single most expensive college in America. They took steps. It's not anymore. Shaftesbury was founded at the same time as Bennington. Its big claim to historical fame is actually pretty awesome. In 1843, it became the first site in Vermont to participate in the Underground Railroad. Go Shaftesbury! I was unable to find any historical notes on Woodford at all. And of course, Glastonbury and Somerset are ghost towns. Somerset is also on Glastonbury Mountain. It has a current population of 2. There's not a whole lot recorded to indicate why this corner of the world would become a beacon for all things weird. I can't deny that that's what happened. If you want to see for yourself, post-COVID, of course, both the Appalachian Trail and the Long Trail go through the area. The Long Trail encompasses Glastonbury Mountain, but it's a challenging hike. And, you know, sinkholes and old wells and Bigfoot and a cursed rock that eats people. Be sure to take proper precautions. And if you see Bigfoot, take a picture for me. Join us next time when we take a trip to the Granite State. Have a happy Thanksgiving. I know it's a little weird this year, but,
stay home.
You know, stay home. Don't go nowhere. Wear your mask, wash your hands, do all the things you're supposed to do, and stay safe.